On this episode of Football 301, Dominique Foxworth joins me for a wide-ranging conversation, and I mean that in the best way possible. We talk about defensive trends, differences, and similarities between when he was playing in the late aughts, early 2010s, and now, and plus some nice NFLPA rants at the end of the show, which was very fun, at least for me. So I hope you guys enjoyed it. It was a great conversation with Dominique. It was so much fun. Hope you guys enjoy. See you guys in a sec. Well, welcome back to Football 301. I'm your host, Nate Tice. Very fun show for you guys today as we're getting to it. It's going to be training camp time once this show comes out, because I think Friday we have some rookies reporting to training camp, which is, that is some whiplash after we just went through the dog days of OTAs and ranking shows and every other superlative type of show that we do in May and June. But why I'm excited to have this guest on today is, first, he's a first time member of Football 301. I have been on his show because he's a much better host than I am. And I haven't returned the favor, but now I am. And yes, also, I get you a defensive perspective, a very smart defensive perspective today. Just talk about where the NFL is at today compared to when he played and what he sees now as a great analyst and host of the Dominique Foxworth show. That is Dominique Foxworth. How you doing, man? Great to have you.
Hey, Nate. Thanks for having me. I'm happy to be here. When you started talking about us approaching camp, it just made me realize that I still have that like pre-camp anxiety. It's been a long time, but like that feeling that you have, and anyone who played football, I'd say high school football wasn't as big in Baltimore where I grew up, but like definitely college and definitely pro football, when you get closer and closer to camp, it don't feel bad, but it don't feel good. It's like, it's coming. It's going to hurt. Does not.
So my birthday is the end of July, so I don't have a great association with my birthday. I don't mean to like sit on a couch right now, but it's just I really don't, because that usually was the first week of camp. It was either and I, even when my dad was coaching, I was a ball boy during training camp, so I've never had an August. And even like August has never existed. Summer was the first week of June. Really, it was Father's Day to the last week of July. I was on that coaching schedule my entire life.
I wonder if the guys feel like training camp is, obviously we've made a lot of changes and training camp isn't as intense as it once was. I know towards the end of my career, I played through some of the changes that are implemented and it didn't feel as awful, but I imagine coaches have found a new way to like make guys tough. Like they're gonna find a way to make it hurt, right?
They have to. They're bored, and that's the thing too, is like coaches are so geeked up already, like by the time the vacation's over, and there's a lot of coaches, you know, family time's not as fun for them as maybe as was at the Tice household.
I get it too. Like, you get to be out on the field, like actually doing stuff, working with people. Like that seems like a lot more fun than what they're doing now, watching a bunch of tape, trying to pick out players, figure out what you did wrong last year. No, let's get down to it. Let's yell at some people. Let's hit. Let's do some football stuff.
There's no more of the imaginary, that would have been a tackle if we had pads on. That would have been a pick if the DB was fully going. That would have been that excuse that always crops up in OTAs. Because when you were the split as a player. This is perfect. You played from 2005 to 2011, a couple teams. So we'll talk about that today. Multiple positions in a defensive backfield, but you were the split of what that CBA that where it changed from the practice time and 2 days went away. Yeah. I mean, 2 days were. When you entered the league, so 2005, that's probably the tail end of kind of those types of training camps. And my dad definitely ran those types of training camps, so that's my experience. But could you even talk about that, the differences then and now?
It was brutal. And like, I think the reason why there was a shift was in part because of CBA negotiation, but also in part because we got a lot more information on like the head injury stuff. Like that stuff was uncovered. And then it went from... we didn't want to have like eliminate any unnecessary hits. Obviously the game's going to be dangerous and we are reminded by about it far too often, honestly, in sad ways. So like, there are going to be consequences of you playing football no matter what. But let's not have any of them take place, or have as few of them as possible take place when we're not under the lights, when it is not in exchange for a substantial amount of money and lots of people are watching. Like, that was the concept behind it. So we don't really have all those answers about how the impact has changed, but like, it felt like the right thing to do at the time. And as you get older, when you're young and you're in it, you're kind of like, this makes no sense. Like, these super intense practices make no sense. But you get a little older, you get away from it, you're like, kind of like, oh yeah, I kind of get the reason why you have to, or you feel like you have to do this. You have to build up some sort of like emotional and physical like callus, because you're going to go through it. And the season's so goddamn long and getting longer and so hard.
It's longer and longer. And at least there's no, actually, the trade-off of preseason games is kind of like not that crazy.
No. I guess
it's not that as much. But
preseason games aren't tough on anybody except for the guys who are trying to like make the team or trying to, those are, I imagine that's incredibly difficult. You're not getting much game plan help, and you are like playing for your life against somebody else who's playing for their life. But most of those guys, either they don't make a team, so they got plenty of time to recover, or they make a team and they're on special teams, or they're on practice squad, and then they can recover. But so I don't know. I remember my rookie year I had the double whammy of being a rookie who was a third round pick, who was also the third cornerback selected. Like, I was the third one selected of the corners in Denver, and we had the old fashioned training camp, and then the season started and people got injured. So I went from going through my first training camp where you're going extra hard. You're a rookie and there's two rookies in front of you. It's like, and I moved up the depth chart quick enough that the first injury happened and I'm starting on week 2 or 3. And I was like, I don't feel like my hip is sore, my back is tight. I just got through the hardest camp of my life.
And it goes, really, because then too, you would play, you would do bowl games, like all-star games. Then you do combine prep, OTAs, and minicamp, which used to be harder as well. Straight into training camp.
I'm deep into get off season. My couch, man. This is how old men supposed to talk, right? This is how old men, back in my day,
you had to do it uphill both ways. Dog,
you got that right. good.
Actually, I was going to even ask you is, because what I've noticed, and this is even just some stat wise, but during COVID especially, I was very bored and watched a lot of old YouTube games on the 80s and 90s, just kind of like, like, see if like my memories were kind of holding up on some stuff. And with less practice time, especially during camp and everything, do you, like, just personal opinion, do you think it has had a negative impact at all in parts of the game as far as like tackling, as far as blocking? Because to me, I think now they have caught up where it hasn't impacted as some of the old heads said. I think there is some, like you said, mentioning the callus part of the body steps. I do think that is a little bit real, but I feel like just technique wise, maybe wise, implementing scheme. Do you think it had a negative impact at all?
Yeah, I'm biased because like I was a part of negotiating that. And I remember immediately after a lot of coaches complained, which like I didn't see as big an issue as they said, but I wasn't in those positions. It was like a lot of offensive line conversation about it. And to me, it felt like maybe you're right, but there are trade-offs in life. And if the O-line plays a little bit worse, but they have fewer hits to the head, then I think it's fine. But I don't think that there was any point where we were like, oh, the game is in jeopardy. Like it never got unpopular. Like it only got more and more popular. And I think you're right. Like you just have to be more efficient. I think that's what it put more pressure on the coaches to run a good practice, because you can't do everything that you want. Like, you have to be more efficient. And to me, that feels like constraints are good. Like, as annoying as all constraints are in our life, like the most impressive things that I've ever done and the most things I'm most proud of and the most unique things that I've done has come as a result of some sort of innovation forced by a constraint that I originally didn't like. So, like, stop complaining. And I like, there was nothing more fun than after we get through the CPA.
Oh, my coach is complaining? No.
Yeah, and the coach is telling me that this is not working and we need more time. I'm like, whoa. You tell me go out there and cover Randy Moss in man coverage. And no excuses then, right? I can't get no excuse. He run by me. I was like, but he's 6'5 and runs a 4'2. You better figure it out. Yeah, you better figure it out too. You figure out how to run a practice the way that good teams run practices.
I think that's so real though. That just being a human is like how many times you've been constrained and then like find a way and whatever it is. No, I'm such a believer in that as well. I could go into a whole thing about just I just read recently, but no, O-line play is definitely, I don't think it has been as negatively impacted as some of those old heads say and some old coaches say. I think it's more just, you know, some of the injury stuff more than anything, but the play, like some of the like double teams and the timing and everything, I think coaches just found new ways to implement it. Like, and I think the better coaches, like you say, the better coaches just find new ways rather than going, oh, we can't just run inside drill for 24 plays in a row. Now we have to do 10 plays of it and we might not do it every day. It's like, yeah. And if you look at pass protection, offensive linemen got so much better at pass protection. It's like, so yeah, maybe run blocking got a little worse, but they're better at pass protecting and they're more athletic. So like you said, there's trade-offs with all this. And also, do you know what the logo is for like the Offensive Line Association for cool? My dad was never a member. So it's a mushroom because they say that the offensive linemen got always put into the dirtiest patch of grass where the mushrooms grow. And that's where they got to practice. They like to complain. Like they just like to complain. That's just how they all go. But and there's stats that back this up too. Oh, I'm sorry.
No, I feel like I don't want to take you off whatever course you had, and I think that this is a very interesting detour, and I might tease you into going over there. But like, just think about like the innovations that have come, the biggest innovations in football. You think about like how the spread offense and the quick game is a result of like the limitations that certain schools have, and it works its way up. And like the RPO is a result of limitations that works its way up. Like this is the beauty of football, is like this. They're so dramatic, like the differences between the positions and the offenses and the defenses and the things that can work. Like there's so many different things. It's so unique relative to other sports where it's kind of like everybody on the soccer pitch, since we're in World Cup time right now, they kind of all are the same, like different variations of the same type of player. I know how ridiculous that sounds to someone who is like,
I know what you mean though,
deeply entrenched in soccer, but like everybody passes, everyone defends, everyone shoots, everyone moves. Like that's it. And same thing is true of basketball. Football is like, no, I can't play left tackle. I can't do it.
Right.
It's like an entirely different game. And I think that leads to a level of complexity that I think is fun. And so like, if we're limiting you in some area, then you have to figure out how to make it work in another area. And so I don't know. I think it's great. I love it. Football's fun.
I know. And that's what really this, how this whole episode started even, was a text from you. And that's actually even related to what you're just talking about. And this might be just because you're such a good host and know how to segue stuff, but it's with, you mentioned too, is that just the, you know, constraints, all that. But what, so I've looked at stats even like tackling in open spaces has gotten better than ever because defenses had to tackle in space. They had to face, like you mentioned, those air raid offenses in college and then the NFL. And if I'm getting bubbled to death, I'm going to learn how to defend a bubble or an RPO or whatever has beat me over the face.
I think that also speaks to the evolution of the body types in the sport and the types of players. If there was a time when something else was more important or less important, like those players would be found. Like I see it now where we're talking about how the big nickel has become a thing. And it feels like people are like, well, it's so hard to find these players. It's not actually hard to find those players. Mm-hmm. We just haven't been looking for them. Like I remember so many guys that would have been great big nickels, but we didn't believe in it as a concept, or you didn't need it as a concept. So there are lots of like 6'2", 200 pound, super athletic guys that we were like, man, he's a linebacker, but he's too slow, but he's too small. This is a safety, but he's a little too big to be a safety. Like, those guys exist. It's the same way when you talk about, like, the evolution of the pass rusher. You're right. And, like, you talk about the evolution of, like, the pass rusher, where now we got these super lean freak athletes that all seem like they're descendants of Lawrence Taylor in some way. Where it's like, no, those guys existed. We just were like, nah, you're a little too this or too that to play the other position. So, like, I think that's the same thing. Is true. And so if you're selecting, there are lots of guys who are good at open field tackles, but at one point it felt like the offense weren't optimizing for getting guys in space in the way that they are now.
Yeah.
So you might, your nickel or your safety might be required to make, I don't know, 12 open field tackles in the whole season. So when you're watching film, you're like, hey, this guy's a hell of an open field tackler. So I don't need that. And now you're watching film like, man, he's a little slow in the coverage, but he don't miss no open field tackles. I need this guy on my team. And those guys always existed. So it does change the type of people that you're gonna attract, but it's all cyclical. And I know whatever we talk about scheme-wise, we're going to be like, yeah, this happened before. It might have happened in a slightly different way, but we've been here before. All the stuff that we're doing now, we've done it before.
Well, they used to call those players tweeners, and now they call them hybrid players. Tweeners, derogatory, hybrid, complimentary. That's what it's kind of turned into.
I wrote a piece on the Honey Badger a while ago and how he, to me, was the point where he was coming in and we're like, this guy's great, but he's a tweener. And people argue that he fell in the draft because, like, weed or something. No, he fell in the draft because people didn't know what to do with him. Like, no one is scared away from, I mean, any sort of from issue, that. Honestly. Especially it's, not that. And I know it was a different time, but no, it was like, we don't know what to do with him. And then he kind of became the prototype of a player that's like not quite a corner, not quite a safety, but actually can do a little bit of everything. And that, to me, I wrote a piece and it worked out really well because he is from New Orleans, which of all the cities in the country that is more a mixture of a bunch of different things, New Orleans is it. So it's like New Orleans is Spanish, it's Caribbean, it's
a gumbo, if you will.
Yeah, exactly. And then it becomes, it's French. It's everything. And that becomes this own unique thing, which, like, for Tyrann Mathieu is that. And then we're all like, you know what? New Orleans, cool. Like, it's really cool. I need to get me a versatile football player. Yeah. But anyway, I don't know. Way off on a tangent to think. You text
No,
me.
Go.
Like, I don't That's know what we're going to talk about.
I don't either. I know. I don't even know what I had. I had seven like bullet points. I don't even know. I think we've hit on all of them and I don't even know which section to go with. But I actually have a player I want to throw your way this is the offensive side that I think nowadays you mentioned bubbles would have been like now players knew how to or offenses know how to get players in space now. Peter Warwick is that guy that I always said, like, just he goes to the Bengals. That doesn't help. But it was just one of those guys that offenses at that time didn't know what to do with that skill set. And if he was just like 6 years later, 7 years later, he would have had the skills. He would have been Percy Harvin or something. Well, that type of player, I should say. Right. Exactly. But yeah, that's the name. Just Debo Samuel or something.
Yeah. That's the name that you bring up for people my age to find out like how much they loved football when they were 12. how into football you were when you were like
the Sugar 10. Bowl.
Like, it's just people go nuts. It's funny because the further you get away from it, the more that we remember it like nostalgically and the less that other people remember it. Like, I assume that this was something in every part of the country, but we turned like juking somebody was called Peters. And I remember saying about any type of athlete that we were like, he got Peters. He got them Peter. Like, it was that's how special a player he was. He was doing the moves that he was doing new moves. And like, I grew up Barry Sanders being my favorite player. I was like, okay, there's one of them. But we hadn't seen somebody do it in such a smooth way. Like, Barry Sanders was incredibly explosive and herky-jerky. He was my favorite player because of that. But Peter Warwick was, like, so smooth in it and just would stop on a dime in a way that I hadn't seen before. And it was a can't miss. Like, this guy's going to Hall of Fame. And then it just didn't quite work out.
Just nothing really happened. I know. It's but all right, I'm going to actually get us back to a bullet point.
I love it. Where the quarterback? Where the quarterback?
I was picking your. I know, right? But that's actually what I should talk to you about, too. Actually, this is related. We've talked about constraints, talk about like hybrid players or, you know, tweeners, whatever you want to say, or just body types and everything, too. Is something I've noticed, and knowing your background and everyone, I mean, it's really cool. I think just even off field, what you've done as well. What I thought is really cool over the years is the green dot, which the green dot didn't really exist your entire career. I think when did the green dot come? Right, 2011-ish, 12-ish, something like that.
The offensive guys got it first. We didn't get it.
Oh yeah, wait.
Immediately.
Yeah, right, defense thing for a while.
Yeah, I was out of the league by the time I think we got a green dot on defense.
Okay, so
maybe or then maybe I don't
when you
remember.
Played, it was all signals, right? So it was all signals, all verbal communication, which still exists now to like, you know, shorten things. And this is related to the text that you were talking about and everything just going with that. I've noticed more safeties have gotten the green dot. They are the play callers. They are the ones on defense, which I know you're just like, finally, you know, you guys are at the back end. You guys should see everything, right?
Yeah, I mean, the producers on my show are going to make fun of me because I do a lot of cross analogies and I fall back on science I fall back on science quite a bit, and I've already referenced evolution, but I think that it's just in the same way that the environment like shifts to it be advantageous for certain animals who have certain type of characteristics. The same thing is true. Like this game is moving more to the safety. The safety is the captain of the defense. The Mike linebacker isn't anymore. Like that, those days are gone. The safety is the one who's making the decisions and who can see everything. It's much closer to the quarterback corollary is what the safety has to do. And so, yeah, like the green dot should absolutely be in the secondary and should be in the safety who's in that spot. And I think you've referenced the text a couple of times, but it's random because I know there's some people that I can just send an out of nowhere text because it's hard to watch film in the off season. You're trying to watch film to get smart. And when I have a thought, I'm like, I know that no one cares about this, but I know this guy will find it interesting. But my text was about, and then it led to this show, which we haven't even talked about yet. But my text was about autonomy on defense and how I think that the future for defense is going to be with the on-field guys having more autonomy to change and alter plays based on what they're seeing the other team do. And I think that's going to come from the safety. And I think that's where we have to go is the decision-making process. I think it's going to move for the defense is going to move closer and closer to the field because you see so often that in the course of a game, the chess match takes place from game to game where it's like, all right, we saw what you did. Now we're going to do this. Then it started to take place from like half to half. All right, when we get in the locker room, we're going to solve this problem. And now it feels like on the offensive side, they're speeding it up. They're speeding it up where it feels like from series to series, we're going to solve this problem. And I think the players on the field are going to get to the point where it's like, I know what they're doing. And you brought up a good point where it's like a lot of the kills. It's just so obvious where when you do a hard count, you kill a play. I know that you know what we're doing. So I know what you're going to do based on what we're doing. Mm-hmm. So why the hell am I going to sit in this? I can trust you to make these decisions.
Yeah, I love that. So what Dominique's saying there is that at the end there was we were just going back and forth. And I thought the smarter coaches stopped doing the typical kill used to just be a run with a pass. And it was essentially more or less would come down to was it single high or too high? If it was too high, we're running the ball. If it's single high, we're throwing the ball. Guess what? Like everything we've talked about, defense has figured it out and they started catching up and they started adding late rotation. They started just doing all these kind of counters and countermeasures and being able to, and what you're saying though is just having that defender have the autonomy going, hey, we can get into this because that even if we didn't have that as a packaged play or something after the offense does something.
And I mean, we've, like I said before, everything is kind of cyclical and we've been through these places before. And sometimes there's when you can, this is one of the benefits of like too high defenses is it splits the field a little bit defensively. So you can make changes and alterations on your side that involve just the three or four secondary linebacker defenders or two that are on one side. So I remember when we play man, I remember this game specifically. We played man when I was in Denver a bunch in a game against, I think it was the Cardinals. And the Cardinals were specializing in these stacks where they would create these stacks and try to mix up our man coverage. So we got to the point where on the field, we went into the game like we're going to in and out it. Okay, they've seen a bunch of in and out, and now they would do like an arrow route or something that would beat the in and out. And so we're like, all right, well, we now will do like a tandem is what we called it. So you press the point, and the guy who pressed the point would end up guarding man to man. The guy who's in the back and the guy off the point would take the top guy.
Hat.
And so, we called it tandem, call it top hat. And you have a bunch of different ways.
I try to explain that all the time. There's a million ways to call one thing. Yeah. It's just, as long as we're speaking the same language, we're good. Yes.
And so we got to the point where we could make the decisions. We'd have three different ways to play something, and we could make the decision on the field. And I think that broadening that out to bigger situations where you can decide based on what you're seeing and what you're anticipating, I think helps. So it will help so much, because these offenses, I think, are getting smarter, and particularly with the way that there's only a few kind of systems that have like become really like prevalent in football. And obviously like the Shanahan disciple system is one, and you can speak to this. It's like the biggest one now, and you can speak to this better than I can, but like what it does for the quarterback, if they can get a good pre-snap read, is paint by numbers. And I think us having the autonomy to have a different look in the course of a series be super helpful, because if you come to the line and like, all right, this shift in motion will show me this, and then they do that. All right, we as an offense, we saw it in the first four. We got through that, and now we're in the second one. We'll do it again, but we're going to attack it. For the defense to have the ability to recognize that you're coming back to that because you know what we're up to, for the defense to have the ability to say, nope. Nope. I know why you're here right now. I know what you're doing, and you're not going to get us, I think is where we're headed.
Yeah, it's like they smell the man beater. They smell this beater. They smell the play action off the same look. And that's where offenses try to use so much motion. Like motion is just keeps increasing year over year. Motion at the snap is really the one. But then same thing, and this is kind of getting back to everything we've talked about, is defenses, rather than getting to maybe a perfect play call, just went, all right, we're just going to run quarters and we're just going to catch it. You know, like, hey, we're not going to like pass everything off. And that's why I was curious even to pick your brain based on what you played against and what you see now is like, that is like, you know, but that's kind of what you're getting to too, is like, that is the kind of the check, I guess, or that's the final call that defense can kind of get to kind of catch it all.
The thing that stands out to me is I didn't realize it at the time, but I've come to realize it a lot more since I've watched film. And that's the funny thing where like, your body goes like this and your mind goes like this and everyone knows that like at like 27 it's before your body gets too bad, your mind's at its best at its best. So my body is all the way down here, but like what I understand about football is so much higher. And had I been able to like, I think that's like the magic of Ed Reed is a name that always comes up when I talk about this, is like his mind was up here way before, so far above that it would piss off. I interviewed our show. We just aired an interview where I did with John Harbaugh, and John was talking about how him and Ed would go weeks without talking to each other because they were pissed. And it's because Ed was thinking something then, and John was like, no, but that's not it. And it's not what we do. And it's too risky. And Ed would have such conviction that he'd do it anyway. And it would work out more times than not. But then it's beefing. It's like, I'm the head coach of the team. We're going to win by playing good, sound football, not by you doing some off the wall. And it's like, no, this is actually not off the wall. It's like what I recognize and the thing that Ed does that I think
it's off a study.
I don't even. Yeah, it's not even about the study. Is I think that you wouldn't. It's hard to put into words because I would study, but I would study. Or it's not hard to put into words. I'm not sure if these are the words that he would use. I could ask him, but we don't got time right now. But I think the thing that he was better at than a lot of us was seeing the game like a quarterback. And so I would watch film of the defense. I mean, watch film of the opposing offense and think very little about how our defense looks to them. and how they want to attack us. And so I occasionally go into games where it's like, all right, third and medium, they like this concept. And not take into account that that was against, they played three defenses in a row that majored in cover three. Okay,
right.
We don't major in cover three. We're a cover four base team. Then we get there and it's like, they're not doing nothing that I expected. Like, that's because they're not attacking what they were planning on
preparing against that.
Yeah.
It's so a totally stupid. Different preparation.
And, and I think you get to the point about where I started with this was because I wanted to make the point that I learned pretty early in my career that quarterbacks are trying to make their decision before they snap the ball.
Yes.
And right. And the further you can push their decision making process, the worse they're going to be. And that's true of all the quarterbacks. If you make them snap the ball and make up their mind in the course of the play, they're going to have more failures than successes. Mm-hmm. And that's, you name them, whoever they are, they're going to struggle with that situation.
It's 100% know
what So, and I think that one thing we did a poorer job of back then, and they do a better job of now, is, and it ties back into the versatility conversation, is cross-training everyone so that your alignment and personnel doesn't tell. And this is like, we ran a little bit of inverted coverages, but not nearly enough. And it became pretty obvious. So like, if you don't know, if my alignment, and I remember Ray made a big point of this. When we played Peyton Manning, do not move. Line up in the exact same spot. I don't care what the call is. Line up, and I don't care that you won't be able to get to your blitz. I don't care that you're going to be out of position to cover whatever route that you need to be positioned for. Get in the same formation and we will play whatever coverage we have to, or whatever blitz or whatever front we have to, from the same alignment to give them no clues. I think we end up losing that game like 13-6, but like, we played really well against them because of it. Yeah. And that's what you see a lot more in these modern defenses, is corners having to be comfortable with, if they're going to motion me across and put me in the slot, I need to understand the nickel's responsibilities. Or we're going to bring our safety down. This is a indicator of cover three. I need to be able to play deep half. And of course, it's not going to be as perfect, but you're relying on them having some time to figure it out to help you, to put you in an advantageous situation.
What's the toughest part of that? Like, I've always wondered that as a corner, because sometimes, like you mentioned, you said like, oh yeah, we had invert.
Easy question. Yeah.
But usually you knew when you were getting invert. It was pretty, like, even if you played Greg Williams or something like that, Dennis, you'd be like, all right, the safety's in this one spot. They're running two things. Right. He's either blitzing or they're running two invert.
Yep.
And I mean, so as a quarterback, I always mentioned that you always want to make everything rock, paper, scissors. If you just make it rock, paper, you're going to, if good quarterbacks or good offenses, good defense, they're going to shred you. Like, if you just, but you have to make everything at least one of three. And I've always been curious, like, especially like defenses, when you do get shredded with that, like, what is hard about that? Or what is the difficult aspect that you wouldn't think of other than turning and running backwards with your back to the ball? And the other thing is, what are you scared of? Like, and when you're in these kind of maybe quarters defenses or this inverse stuff, you mentioned Peyton Manning and kind of hiding stuff. What scares you as a defense? Like, what is the thing that you're going, like, we want to keep them from doing this? And it's probably deep balls, but even just something maybe even more detailed than that.
That's the answer. If you ever ask me as a defensive player what scares me, it's one play drives, 30 yard chunks, it's any of that. Yeah. Like, that scares me. Give me a chance to play another down. And I think the reason why coaches were hesitant to do some of that invert stuff, because the players are not cross-trained. And so it's, I think what we don't understand, and we lose this, is like, everything's so video game-ized in our mind, where it's like, if I put a guy in this spot who has this ability and I put him in the right location, he will perform based on his physical ability. I don't think we take into consideration, I think even us as players don't take in consideration, how important it is to be familiar with the spot that you're playing, right? And how the repetition of seeing something from a particular location, how that repetition makes you go a half second quicker or a tenth of a second quicker.
Yes.
And of course, that tenth of a second is the difference between you getting your hand on the ball and getting an interception or missing it altogether. And those plays are gigantic. So like I can be a corner who knows where my landmark is. Like I can get to 3 yards off the hash if I'm a half player and backpedal. But what I'm not accustomed to, what I haven't seen 10,000 times, is number one going bending across and then them running a dig in behind with the quarterback looking away. Like these just things that I haven't seen a bunch of times, where if you've seen it a bunch of times, you're comfortable with it. I remember a time where I was playing a bunch of outside corner and they motioned us to, we were playing two man and they did some sort of motion to keep me in the slot, and I played super low on it and was like, yeah, this is on the outside. You play super low on two man. If you're on the inside, you have to guard the middle of the field. So you kind of got to play higher on the hip. And they just 20 yards right down the thing. And I'm like, this is two man. But I was like, no, it's not in the middle of the field. It's not.
It's a little thing. Yeah.
Not really. Yeah. Which is, it's like counterintuitive to think like, yeah, I got two over the top. We should be safe. It's like, no. And that, I mean, I don't know. It drives me crazy how people talk about too high. Like it is, it just destroys explosive plays. Like it doesn't. Cover two was the second coverage ever created. Like teams can, it's not that sophisticated. Teams have figured out ways to beat too high 1,000 different times.
Correct. Yes, they have dozens of beaters. Dozens. Everyone can draw lines on a board. It's very, and that's what's actually, I always like scouting the NFL or watching the NFL, is like the good plays just get distilled down. So the menu isn't as big as people think it is. It's just, it's so dressed up, and that's the difference. It's just how they dress it up. That's all it is. Are there players that you see as kind of, you mentioned Ed Reed, as like rule breakers? Like I that's what, you know, even quarterback watching, that's why I appreciate what I, you know, what I call the wild horses, you know, the guys that can just do things that are unfathomable. But just even on the defensive side of the ball, maybe someone that's unappreciated or underappreciated, or you can just talk about the stars, but guys that you watch and you're like, people don't realize that this guy breaks rules. It doesn't have to be them going rogue like Ed Reed would, but they do things that truly move the needle.
Yeah, I mean, there's a ton of players that do things. I mean, I think Kyle Hamilton, to stick with the Ravens, that's obviously one that's not going to surprise people, who breaks rules, and his versatility allows him to do that. It feels like there are no rules for what he can do, given his size and athleticism and intelligence. Jalen Petrie comes to mind as a guy who's in Houston, who can do a bunch of different things, and seems, you never really know what a guy is thinking, but when he finds himself around the ball a bunch of times from different spots, I'm like, that's a smart player. Like, I know this player is smart because I can see that
that's
he's moving himself around. That's where
the cross-pollination
happens. Yeah,
is
exactly.
That he's played so many different spots. He kind of goes, all right, I've seen this before. I'm going to close on that. Yeah, no, that's a great shout.
I think, and also it's like the marketing around it matters, because like I consider myself a responsible person, and I think it cost me as a cornerback. It's like, I wasn't a gambler as a cornerback. And what you're, when you say it's like a strategic rule breaker, like I would have convinced myself like that's different, but no, it was like, this is, I'm gambling. Like, no, let's live the fight another day. And I think like Christian Gonzalez comes to mind as someone who's kind of like a gambler, but it's very strategic in his gambling. And it's an appreciation for how difficult it is to play quarterback also, where it's like, all right, yeah, I'll give you a step on this deep ball, but can you hit it? And that was something that I think from my perspective as a player was like, no, I'm not going to ever give up the deep ball if I can control it. Like I'm not ever going to entice a quarterback to throw that, which I think is a tougher thing to do, because there's just it's just such a penalty. It's just such a penalty when you give up a big play. Yes. And I just was like, nah, that's that. I think I had more of a safety's mentality at corner, because like I didn't mind hitting despite my size, but I also was like, no, nobody's getting behind me. And that's the difference between but I was playing corner like, nah, nobody's getting behind me, and it's like I'll tackle it and I will wait for you to make a mistake, not try to force you to make a mistake, which I think a lot of the best corners, like, it's a difference. I think the best corners are like, all right, this is the time. It's like, it's third and six and the third quarter, it's the biggest play of the game. You don't have the balls to double move me right now. I'm sitting at these sticks. I don't give a shit what happens. And like, I didn't have that in me. I was like, all right, I'm going to run this technique so well that I'm going to break it up. And sometimes it worked, but most of the time it's like, all right.
Hey, they made a hell of a throw. Hey, what do you want me to do?
What do you want to do? I want you to sit on it.
I mean, the guys you mentioned, do you find yourself appreciating guys that play different than how you play? Because that's how I appreciate quarterbacks. Absolutely. The guys, because I was Mr. Check Down Charlie, safe. Mm-hmm. Right, exactly how you do it.
That's like why on me the and board. You are here, man. That's why we are here and we don't got buff.
I mean, you,
out here
you
trying to be responsible.
You made it much higher than I did.
Hey, whatever.
Russell Wilson beat me out in three plays.
we look the same size from Canton. I'm pretty sure that is you and I. We look the same size,
same distance.
So yeah, exactly. True. It's like two little specks off in the distance. But I really appreciate those guys.
I do too. That's the guys that break rules. That's how I always just call it. It's like, those are the guys. Cause I can't fathom doing, I always mention this with Russ, was when he came to Wisconsin, it was 7-on-7. It was the third play. He broke contain and on it. And he was the first guy I ever saw. And this take you way back. First guy I ever saw that would like extend a 7-on-7 drill. It used to be, 4 second sack or whatever, 3 second sack.
Right.
He would actually turn into a scramble drill, which now kind of everyone does. He was the first guy I was ever around that did that. I was around Culpepper too. And he launched a ball on the move about 60 yards and threw it into the back corner, perfect on the line at Jared Aberderis. And I was like, that wasn't even, when I saw him breaking contained, I didn't even see that. Because my brain went, no, you know, you don't throw that. And then he did it. And I was like, yeah, he's got it. Like, this isn't a competition. he's got it. That was easy. And I was curious. You mentioned, like, you know, watching other sports and everything. The thing that I thought was safety play and center backs in soccer, how much those relate to how they have to see the game. And it makes sense to put more onus on the safeties to get everything right, just like a center back in soccer. And I feel like that pairing, the rotations of them works really well. It's something I've kind of been fascinated by. So that's why I was curious if you noticed kind of the same thing.
No, absolutely. And I think the like being tied together to me is, and I'm getting out of my depth now when we talk about football in the world's game, is being tied together in the secondary is the same thing, whereas you need to keep a consistent line as far as whether you're going to be, you're trying to draw somebody off sides or not. Like, that is a thing that stands out to me when I watch these World Cup games from a defensive perspective, where there was a guy, a curly haired guy on Spain the other day that was a defender, and he was balling, and he was making all the plays, and there were so many of them that it's like, I understand sports spacing and rules, and I'm like, that ain't it. That you breaking rules right now, but you're making plays. I don't know who you are, Curly Q, but you're out here balling in Atlanta, and I don't like it because I wanted to see France advance, but I don't like it, but I respect it.
So did I. Oh no, that's how. You understand, I think that's what a lot of athletes, when they even just watch soccer, you kind of just understand, like, even the guy, like, any score and how they move in space, and you're like, oh, I get why you're good. They find those kind of little spaces, and the triangles of an offense in football are the exact same in soccer. Like, that's the thing that clicks for me. I'm like, I kind of notice where the passing lanes are about to come, like, because it's like, same thing as a pass concept.
And it's the exact same thing where they are finding zones and they're like dropping themselves right in the most threatening part of the zone, which is like, I'm forcing you to make a binary decision right now. And either way, you're going to be wrong. It's like, we are overloading this side, or I'm going to make a run right here. I'll overlap outside, because then the outside defender has to go out there to take that, which opens the lane for me, or stay on me and I can tap it out to him, which then shifts the entire defense. And from that position, you just see repetitively that person then does a long cross because the defense has been shifted over. It's all like, sports is spacing, man. It's spacing and decision making. And it's just like the mentality of a player. Like, some of that stuff is just so innate and natural. And to get to the highest level, this is what you see. It's hard to pick up when you like have a guy at the combine who's killing all the drills. Like, why can't that guy be as effective as you want him to be? It's because he looks at it and he's like, all right, they're doing this, so I got to do that. The other guy already did it, so he's faster than him. Even if his time's not faster, he's faster than him because he's already started to make the move to where he wants to go. And I think smart coaches are able to coach around guys who don't see the game as clearly and trick them into doing the right thing, or at least take the pressure off them. Like, look, what you do is run real fast over there. We'll do other stuff around you, but I need you to, when I was coaching flag football with my son's team a few years ago, and I was like, yeah, this kid don't understand. He don't see the game the way some of the other kids do, but he can fly. So what I would do is put you out here and just run, man. Just run. Yeah. And then after we score a touchdown off a play where he was a decoy, I'm celebrating him. Like, you did that. You know, you did that. Yes. That was your touchdown. Yes. I ain't going to throw it to you because you can't catch. You can't track the ball over your shoulder. But I'm going to celebrate you. It's the same as offensive lineman. Like, yeah, you kept the guy in front of you. We're going to celebrate you.
You have Troy Williamson on your team. I think you even mentioned – I knew you'd get that one. You even mentioned, though, like, you're talking about just even DB play and getting better, and you're talking about, you know, your intelligence picks up. Because I agree. It's like, I know now. It was like, oh, I wish I knew this as a freshman in college. It was like, this would have been a lot more fun. But it's what I was just going to say is this, like, even just with all that getting quicker, like one touch in soccer, it's like those guys, they just anticipate. Just, I always say in quarterback play, is so many people are enamored with the throwing motion and not with their feet and everything. Like, the aesthetics of the throwing motion gets overrated, I think. Everyone throws differently. We're all built so differently. And I just think not enough people focus on the feet. And because that is where you can see the fat getting trimmed out, and where those quarter seconds, those tenth of a seconds, like you mentioned, that's where the ball comes out earlier. And then when the ball comes out earlier, no one can break if the ball's out early. Yeah. You know, no defender, how close it is, they can't break if that ball's out before the receiver's breaking on the route. I mean, you know, maybe if you're reading the quarterback, you can maybe play off that. But I just always come back to that, because you watch the World Cup and you see these guys, they're touching the ball the ball's halfway through, and you can see them already getting ready to kick as the other guy's breaking. It's just like, it's very fascinating to watch. I love it.
I mean, I imagine someone's done a study at some point. I don't know if we have the technology to hook up some sort of brain reading software while people are playing and making these decisions. But it'd be interesting to see, like, how much activity is actually happening and the differences between the players and who, like, is it actually a lot calmer than you anticipate? Is there a particular area that's working more than others? Like, I'd be interested to see what's actually happening and how to actually differentiate it. Because we don't have... I talk about this a bunch a few years ago probably more than a decade ago, when analytics first started to move over from baseball to basketball, and it's just starting to get to football, where I was just wondering, like, what's the next thing we're going to measure? And I think one of the things I thought about was, like, how personalities work together is something that I think that we might measure. But then it's this brain activity would be interesting also, is like understanding who's thinking out there and who's not, and how quickly they can adapt. Like, those sorts of things are really tough to test, because it's not clear on film what you're being told or why you're doing something, and understanding that while you're taking risk. It's been funny, while Caleb Downs is being really celebrated coming into the draft and people are really excited about him. Caleb Downs is an incredible player, incredible, smart, talented player. But Caleb Downs is a follow the rules type of guy. He can do everything, but Caleb Downs ain't gonna make you no plays that you didn't expect. He's not gonna miss plays.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
He's gonna raise the floor.
He's an eraser, not the pencil or pen. He's an eraser. It's a difference.
I know this sounds, the funny thing is, there's such a thin line between what is positive and what is negative in so many different players, where Caleb Downs is obviously like the stereotypical coach's son. Like, he's a coach on the field, coach's son. I'm smart. I'm going to do exactly what's asked of me. Mm-hmm. I had a similar, like, mental disposition when I was out there. Yep. And you talk about certain guys where it's like, he thinks he's smarter than the coach. That's normally a negative thing. But what if you are? Like, what if you are? Then you got to
be right all the time.
Right. Yeah. And then you got, and the thing is, you're not going to be right all the time. You're going to be wrong a lot early on. But the trade-off is, all right, and this is true of Ed also. Like, every time he took a gamble, it didn't work, but it worked 80% of the time. And the result was...
It's worth it.
I would recommend... Yeah,
if you want to hit home runs, you got to strike out.
Exactly. You nailed it. And it's also like having an understanding that you can't have too many of them on your defense. Yeah, you got to have some people that are willing.
Don't build the whole plane out of them.
Yeah.
And that's you what you're talking about, just even personalities working together is play styles.
Exactly.
And that, I feel like the NBA's found that, where they're like, we don't need all-stars. Well, they had to, some of their CBA. But it's, hey, no, we can get boost effects if these guys have synergy together. I think the guys that come to mind the most is the Nuggets. You know, but okay, we don't need all-stars. Exactly. Maybe they do. But just get all the guys that work with our all-world, all-time center that's a passer, and we distribute. But we can get a point guard that shoots first, as opposed to being a distributor, because our center is a distributor. You know, now we can get Aaron Gordon as the guy that's near the rim.
It's so much easier talking about this stuff through a basketball lens because of how simple it is. I think it becomes pretty clear to people where you're like, I need a floor spacer. That's simple, straightforward. It's like, I need a 3-and-D guy, someone who can take the pressure off of my star on defense and get people out of his way, punish people for cheating. It's the same thing in football, but sometimes, because the point I was making before about how there's so many different games going on at once, you can alleviate pressure and shift how well somebody plays a thousand different ways in football. And in basketball, it's a lot simpler, where it's like, look, obviously I'm not a basketball coach, and I'm not saying that I can be. I'm not saying I know as much about basketball as basketball people, but I can watch a game and be like, oh, they don't respect him. They're shading off of him. That's clogging the lane.
You
he
see
can't
space.
Drive because they're...
or lack thereof.
It's the same thing. Right. And he can't drive.
Yeah.
Or like... this guy is a playmaker. Like, I think that's one of the things that I've come to like understand more as I watch basketball, is like the need of the desperate need for a second playmaker. And it's like the Pistons were the great example of that this year. And you see, I don't know, the Knicks found some better secondary playmakers by Cat becoming one. And I think that was part of the unlock for them and you see that in football all the time too. I'm sorry to get off on a tangent, but that's
this is great.
The sexiest thing about football is there's something at every level that can be super enticing, where it's like, all right, I just like violence. All right, watch people slamming each other. That is, you know, and it's like, all right, I like big, explosive, fancy plays. Like, you can watch that. Yeah, displays of incredible athleticism. You can watch that too.
Yes.
Oh, I like intellectual battle of wills. You can watch that too. If you're looking at the right things, watching the safeties and watching the quarterback through the course of a game, you're like, all right, you there now. What you going to do? What they going to do? What you do that? What's going to happen there? And like that.
Where do your eyes go when you watch a game? I always ask players this. Like, where are my eyes watch the safeties. So when I watch a snap. So it
depends on who I'm watching the game with. If I'm watching it by myself, I always watch the safeties. And Amazon does that really cool next-gen view where they have it from the top.
Yes.
I've been emailing everybody at every company, like, just give me that. Give me it somewhere. I don't want to have to wait till afterwards. You know what it does, actually, is it makes my life so much easier. I don't have to rewatch no games.
Thank
I can
you.
Tell a story.
I can, thank you.
I watched it.
I can take notes live and I'm good.
I know. I don't got to rewatch the game. I saw what was happening. But I'm with you. I watch the safeties, which I think most quarterbacks do also.
Yeah.
But I don't watch the offense because, I mean, the offense is designed to confuse you. You know, it's like...
a bunch of liars. Right?
Yeah, that's it. It's just,
that's what I say about safeties.
Yeah, we're getting there. We're working on it. We're getting closer and closer to being the type of liars we need to be. But I watch the safeties, and that'll tell you what you need.
I mentioned this quote already recently, but I interviewed Josh Allen during the Super Bowl, and I said I asked him some bogus question, and he was just like, he goes, "Well, I'm always checking out the safeties, because they're going to tell me." And he goes, "Well, not so much anymore." And how he just said it, I was like, "You're right." He goes, "Because they're doing all the stuff now, and they're like two guys dropping down, it's cover three, and they rotate the corners back." Yeah, no, just all
that
stuff.
Who did he say he watches now?
No, he said, well, now he has to look at the picture. So that's what he was just getting to the point where now has to figure out how everything ties together, as opposed to just cheating on the backside safety. So he was saying that now, based on the team, that it's become, he didn't put in this words, but it's like staring at the ship really close. You kind of have to relax your eyes with it and kind of just see the whole big picture of it all. Yeah, you're kind of reading. I have to re-listen. I took it was that he's reading boundary first, as far as the whole picture of boundary, if that makes sense, with the rotating off.
I mean, they, they have the benefit of having a really good rushing attack and also the benefit of having Josh Allen. So, like, I think he can get, like, his physical arm strength and also, like, ability to scramble and take hits helps in them having a rushing attack really helps because it seems like it takes a little more time to do what he's saying that he wants to do than for most. And I think that's probably the difference between, that's the difference between, like, the being able to create explosives against too high, I think, is it boils down to arm strength and time, right? The guys who can't do it don't have the arm strength to fit it into the windows or don't have the time or aren't willing to stay in the pocket long enough to let it develop. Or accuracy. I feel like Dak Prescott is he's like the king of the seam, the cover two seam. And Dak Prescott,
Jake, like, Ferguson's taking some hits, man.
Boy, Dak Prescott will squeeze it in there.
But that's how you beat cover two. That's how you have to beat cover two in the red zone. So you got to do it.
You have to. That's why we have tight ends, Jake. Like, that's your responsibility is to do that. And I think that a lot of quarterbacks won't try that throw, which is why you end up not being able to get explosives. It's like, all right, I have to be able to threaten this middle of the field so that the safeties can't just go wide. And then I can attack the outside of the field, or I can run a dagger if you're running Tampa. So you're like, all right, you're scared. And Dak will throw it on Tampa also. He'll throw that that seam on Tampa also. But if you take it away, the seam, because you're running Tampa 2 with somebody up the middle, it's fine. I'll dagger you the death, which is going to take a little longer. You need to protect. So, like, it annoys me. I know it's a bit shorthand, and I understand the shorthand where you say we plan, they're playing a lot of too high to take away the explosive plays. It annoys me because I think that the layman fan doesn't understand what's being said. Is like, it's you don't eliminate them. Like, there's plenty. I watched a bunch of them this morning. They're happening. It's too high. The fucking Rams, they're getting it done. Yeah, the Rams are getting it done. And you're just shifting it to, like, rather than putting the pressure on the cornerbacks to cover without much help, you're now putting the pressure on the offensive line to protect, or the quarterback to buy time, or to fit the ball into a tight window and have the arm strength to do it.
The arm strength mentioned right there, or the timing, the time of the play that takes. So the best way to beat cover two are all 5-step and 7-step dropbacks, which take time. Yep. Play action off of those, which takes time. And then the plays that work, you mentioned most of them, seams, deep digs. So those are 18 to 22-yard digs. Takes time. Corner routes from 18 to 20 yards. Takes time. Or the honey hole shot, which takes time. And but it's also just – it just is also what makes those – it's what defenses are doing. Like you said, the explosives haven't been eliminated. Defenses are just saying, I'm going to make you do the hardest thing possible every drive. With those throws are the hardest throws to make, and it's the hardest for the offensive line to protect, or you have to be right 10 times in a row. Those are like, it's pick your poison.
Which you can do. And you just can do it.
Yeah. And I think even, you know, before I even asked you before the show, but I look back at the coaches you played under, and like in each guy, I mean, it was a lot of quarters, which I thought was pretty funny, but you know, but I was looking at all those coaches, and cause I was just trying to find a through line. Cause to me, like, I feel like defenses have gotten so smart at attacking protections. And I was curious of like how well, like in tune you were with offensive protections, maybe when you were playing, or what you've learned as time has gone on, because to me, where I feel like defenses are so much smarter about.
Nope. We were that smart back then too. Like, we so there was two things that I remember. One thing that I did, we did my rookie year in Denver, was we did a bunch of all out blitzing and played a lot of zero. So, like, we started the season hoping that we could play quarters, but we couldn't get the pressure we needed by playing quarters. So we played zero. We do blitz and bluff, was pretty much every third down. We'd line up with like everyone across the line of scrimmage. It looked like punt block, and then some corners and safeties off in coverage. And we'd either blitz it or bluff into a cover three. And that was like based on, we'd mix it up, but it's based on what the coach had anticipated for that and how they would attack us. It would put pressure on us in coverage to tackle well, because you miss a tackle as a score, and to not get run by, but you didn't have much time. But we also would have other blitzes, and so many of our blitzes were based on the position of the back, because that was the tell most of the time. It's like, we had a good idea where the line was going to slide and how we could get two on the back. Was like, that was the purpose. How can we get two on the back as much as possible? And the thing that I think that what you're pointing to now is not that I think defenses have gotten better at beating protections. It's that defenses have gotten better at having their cake and eat it too, where they will beat your protection without sending five. And so
right. Creepers, I know how to get two. Yeah, stuff.
Yeah. I know how to get two on your back, get two, your back responsible for two off the ball guys without actually compromising the coverage. Yep. And of course, some of the guys, and it gets more into the versatility, because some of the guys that you're dropping in the coverage aren't accustomed to doing that, or they play positions yep. that you don't expect them to be able to do it, because you guys are coming to the line like, all right, these four guys we know are rushing. Mm-hmm. Now we got to figure out where the fifth or sixth guy is coming from. Mm-hmm. And so we're like, all right, you think these four are rushing? Fine. We'll send the two that are over here and then two off the ball players also. And if you're in shotgun and the back's on that side, we know you're not, you're most likely not going to make the back go all the way over there. So if you happen to slide the protection to that side, then you'll create a morass and jumble it up and slow mm-hmm. down our blitz. If you go yep. to the right, where you're anticipating, yeah. And you're reading yep. it like, all right, I know these guys are coming. They're not going to send two over here because that will destroy the any coverage concept that they mm-hmm. have. And then, you know what? We send two over there. We roll the safeties from one down here. We roll the down one to the middle, the back one down to the hook, or he can play like the seam player, and yep. take a D tackle from the wayside to drop him to one hook. And then you have the other linebacker to hook. And we played cover three, but got a six-man pressure, like effectively a yeah. six-man pressure on you while also playing cover three. That's where the defenses have kind of gotten better.
Yeah, attacking the back alignment. That's yeah. why under center has come back, and people yeah. think it's with just the play action. It's no, they're hiding the back.
Yep.
He's in a home position. Mm-hmm. And everyone toyed with pistol, and then yeah. they realized it kind of sucks.
Yeah,
I'm going to be honest. Pistol yeah. kind of sucks, guys. That's just my opinion. There's some run plays off of it that are okay, but it kind of sucks. So I think they realized, all right, it's under center shotgun. And then mm-hmm. the back tell. I was watching Indiana, so I was watching Mendoza. Mm-hmm. And their offense is just so well coached. It's a lot of money plays, a lot of RPO stuff, but it's mm-hmm. it's so well coached. They, every single snap, either they had a motion, or if they didn't have a motion, the running back would shift alignment right mm-hmm. at the snap. So yep. it'd either be, you know, offset to home, and they would go pistol, but yep. you can do it in college, whatever. Or yeah. offset to the other offset. They'd flip the back at the end, at the, right at the mm-hmm. snap, and then snap the ball. Yep. And I that just kind of stuck in my brain. It's like, that's what everyone should be trying to do, because you can see defenses going, all right, back away. All right, half slide's coming our way. Boom, we're attacking this. Or like you mentioned, the creepers and simulateds, which is the best thing defenses are doing right now. There's so many defenses just blitzing a mic and then dropping seven into coverage. They're only rushing four. The mm-hmm. running back gets occupied. So there's only four guys out on routes against seven in coverage. And then the quarterbacks are like, oh, shoot, oh, shoot, oh, shoot. And then bad yeah. things happen. So that's, I've been really since the Super Bowl, I've been on kind of a 6 month tangent about how the offensive line coaches got, you know, get their right. Yeah, pick their stuff up, because they have
been
to,
a few years
defenses
it,
right now.
Yeah.
Are toying with it right now.
Yeah. And it's, you see in like the more hires of defensive coaches and like the more prestige of defensive coaches, it feels like we got the lead right now. You had yeah. your little run, but it feels like defenses have taken over. And obviously Mike McDaniel is a big part of that, what they're doing, and his defense is it's kind of spreading around the league. But like that, it's all tied into like that versatility and flexibility. And I think it's like we know your rules.
what were some other tendencies that you know? I know tight end strength, common motions, I guess, would be another one. Yeah. You know, formations, 2x2, yeah. 3x1, all that stuff. Was there one maybe game that you're one game plan you remember that was like you guys had a tell on something and you teed off on it? I always love that. There's just those once in a while you get a juicy one. That's like 100%er on offense. Yeah. We get that sometimes, and it's the best.
For sure. I mean, I can't remember anything specific off the top of my head. I just remember when one thing that I remember in general was like when I understood that they're trying to get to a formation, but it's not the exact same formation. Like you could run they were like in college, you just run bunch concepts and they're like, they run bunch, like realizing that they could get to bunch a bunch of different ways. And yeah, and understanding that in college, they make them all do the same thing because you don't have much practice time and whatever, the players are not consistently as smart. So it's like, it's pretty easy to read, but the NFL, they still like the concepts that they like. I'm watching the Bears third down stuff from last year.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It seemed like they wanted to do like third and medium. They kind of wanted to do the same thing all the time, but they would find different ways to get to it. They seemed like they really wanted to be in 3-by-1, and they had a pretty simple concept that they would alter the person who would do it, whether it was number one, number two, or number three. They'd motion.
Was it the crosser
over to
with
it.
The sit? Oh, yep. I'm sorry. Yeah, you're getting into it. My fault.
That's it. It was, but I mean, it was often they like to put Loveland out there because that was the matchup that they could get, or they put Luther Burden out there because the matchup they get. Sometimes they do it from the slot, but they were trying to get to the same concept, but they would find a bunch of different ways to get there. And they do it from under center, they do it from shotgun a bunch, mm-hmm. but it was just so simple. And I think early in my career, I would have been like, oh, yeah, I guess they're doing something different. And then coming to realize, like, no, you know what they want to do on this down. Don't pay attention to any of that. And it may not be, it may not attack you, but you know where they want to go and what they're trying to do. And that's kind of the tell in general that helps you break out.
That's what I know. I the best line I ever heard from a coach is they say, we're just splashing the water. We're just going, hey, we're making defenders go like, what's that over there? And then here comes the route that you're trying to get to, or the wrong play you're actually trying to get to.
And that's, like you said,
once you just bucket it all.
That's the benefit of like what the Texans do. And that's like, we're talking about all the complicated schemes that are out there.
Yeah.
The Texans, I think this goes back to like how the Texans do their play the same thing all the time. And I think when I was saying earlier, like, what's the drawback of moving guys in different places and having to, it's like, they're not comfortable there. They haven't seen it 1,000 times. Like, no, the Texans have seen whatever play you're going to run at this specific player. He's seen it 1,000 times from the same matchup. We're going to do what we do. And it would frustrate me as a player to play for a coach who's like, since I play, this is what we do. Cause I'm like, but we know what they do. Let's take advantage of it. But like, there's some benefit to that. It's a safety and understanding. And that's, we talked about trade-offs. That's a trade-off. Is the more sophisticated you get, the more chance you are to bust. And I think that's like Brian Flores. It's the magic of Brian Flores. Somebody needs to get in that camp and see what the hell he's teaching, because they do all types of wild shit and you don't get a ton of busts.
They're cover zero. It's not even cover zero, like true how I know it. It's like cover zero zoned. Mm-hmm. And also what I've also noticed is they'll do a lot of double bracket stuff, but it gets categorized as cover four.
Exactly.
And I'm like, and it's one of those where it's like, all right, this is where, hey, AI ain't all there all yet. You know, like,
I think this is why you need to humanize sometimes. I don't say anything to anybody because I don't want to be it happened to me where I was like, I took the stats for the coverage stuff and believed it to be true. And then got in there. I was like, no, I see why you thought this was that, but it ain't that. And it'll throw you off when you start thinking about it. A lot of the, some of the matchup zone stuff, they categorize as one. And I'm like, eh. And like another thing that they don't,
classic quality control conundrum here.
So, exactly.
this was my life for several years. So it's like, is that three match or is that just man? I'm like, what's the corner's leverage
that they don't take into appreciation is like how coverages switch based on like, there's no way for them, which like, I'm sure you could program it to read, to understand that we're reading number two detached and we're adjusting, we're running a palms type look based on the formation and all these plays. So like, you'll come out of a game like, damn, this team played a whole hell of a lot of cover three. They never played cover three, but it's like, no, you can tell if you're watching a game that they're checking to cover three. Based on this. Or you're like, damn, this team played a whole lot of cover two. Like, no, you can tell that they're reading this. Like, I feel like the Seahawks do a lot of that where it's like, I get the sense that a lot of their coverage is
they run the routes for the receivers. There's a lot of cut coverages, and it's just them just running the routes for the receiver. I go through this with protections and people who use five. Oh, they get five. They only use 5-man protection at the highest rate. And it's like, well, that's the result. That might have been a 6-man protection, but the running back didn't have to protect, so he released on the route.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, like, what you're getting with coverage stuff, there's a lot of salt to be with these stats sometimes.
Yeah, that's tough. You can't completely bail. You need good human eyes still for now. We're not losing the AI yet.
Before I get you out of here, I had just a couple other things, because you're kind of a Renaissance man. You have a couple of things. I actually had one random question that came to mind, because you were born in the UK, correct?
Mm-hmm.
In England. Mm-hmm. If you were still when you were playing, if Olympics flag football came around and Great Britain called, would you have been listening? Would you be a dual national?
Absolutely.
Okay, I was curious.
I wasn't going to start for the American team.
Who are you
team?
Pulling for today? Yeah. We're recording this when England's about to play in about 45 minutes. So.
England, of course. Like, I mean, once the U.S. was out, all the African nations are out. Then it's like, all right, France and England. That's all right. France is out. All right, we're England house. And my oldest daughter thinks Jude Bellingham is cute. So we're rooting for Cutie Judy and Three Lions.
My Mina asked me, she's like, do you have a secondary team? I'm like, well, I was like, I'm German, I'm Irish, and I'm Czech, so I guess those are my teams, I guess. Ireland's not in it, so we can narrow this down pretty easily. So Germany and Czech, all right, we'll go from there. And the other thing too, again, Renaissance man, former head of the NFLPA, and I just had a couple things, because I've never really asked you about this, touch on it. I feel like sometimes you get roped into these conversations that I never know if it's like,
I know,
it's like
I love
it. Sometimes me with quarterback prospects, it's like, can I talk about like linemen or like DBs for a sec? You know, just not always talking about Arch Manning again, you know, right. but I kind of was curious about that. And I just had a couple questions, because I just think that one, it's just such a cool part of your resume. Like, I really do. And I respect the NFLPA so much. My dad had a big involvement with it when he played. And for me, I was just curious, where this next CBA going? It looks like the NFL is going to be going, yep, we're going 18 games. We're going all these internationals. We're doing this, this, and that. Do you have, off the top of your head, and you don't have to give your own game plan away, hard line issues that you think should be the line in the sand? Like, right now, it's a lot of grass fields. But for me, that's a prerequisite. That's not even like a carrot to hold out there. But I was just curious if you just had 2-3 thoughts on just matters coming up right now.
I have never cared about anything in my life more than I cared about like unions and football, sports unions in particular. Like, I worked at the basketball union too. And like, I love my job now, but this job is very fun, but it doesn't have the same like value. Like, it actually feels like real, real important good work is being done for unions. So like, that stuff I take incredibly seriously. And always looking, I got a call set up to talk to the baseball union guys in a little bit. Like, that stuff, the college union, potential college union, I'm involved with them. Like, that stuff really moves me. I care about it. As far as like the red line stuff, I'm super hesitant to say what it is for the players, because it has to be what the players care about, right? Like, that's all that matters. I think it's important to understand that, and this might seem obvious, that everything's connected, and the league often tries to like nail things down that aren't connected to the money first. And like, that's one of their strategies, is we're going to get you guys to commit to all this stuff, and we're going to actually negotiate over this. We'll give and take here and there. And then that, none of that has to do with the money. And so you can't expect that this is going to impact the amount of money, or you can't expect that they aren't counting all these decisions towards how they affect the bottom line. Like, that's the scoreboard, how much money. And so again, while you say grass fields are a must, grass fields is going to come out of their pockets, which is going to impact the way that they're going to negotiate everything else. And of course, this was like true of us when we were talking about the concussion stuff. Like, at that time, it felt like nothing was more important than trying to protect the brains of the players that we had just kind of found out. Like, and of course, it seems like common sense now, but before we were like, oh nah, just get shaken up. The symptoms are gone in a couple of days. There's no long-term impact. And so at that time, we were like, we actually don't know what the long-term impact is. Like, it's killing people. It's destroying people's quality of life afterwards. Like, it's leading to higher occurrences of ALS. So we're like, all right, football's not going away. How do we, what can we best do to protect our players? The most important thing to me at that time was like, reducing the hits to the head. And so, of course, all that is connected as you go forward. So, like, as sophisticated as I can get with all the different talking points, it still ultimately comes down to the money. And one of the things that just generally, and this is a broader cultural observation that I feel like I was guilty of it also, so I don't mean it as a as passing judgment. I mean, I went to Harvard Business School. So like, after you hear what I'm about to say, it's going to sound ridiculous coming out of my mouth, but like, I just hate the diminishment of labor in general. And we are party to it, where it's like, everybody wants to be a boss. Everybody wants to be management. Like, there's so much cachet behind, like, I'm in charge. I tell people what to do. And like, I grew up like hip hop culture, and that's a lot of that also. But of course, that's just mirroring the general sentiment of society, where it's like, workers are suckers and the management are the cool guys who wear fancy clothes. It's like, no. Like, we are labor, and that's what means something to me. Like, I am much more proud of the fact that I wore sweats and a helmet to work than I am of any time I put on a tie. And so, like, I don't know how we got to the point that we all kind of collectively are like, no, the rich nerds are the cool guys. And we got away from, like, you know what's dope? That makes something. That gets dirty and gets bruised, like that
is doing that, something.
Yeah. And like that to me, and it happened inside the union, where it's like, all right, let's see, we gotta get more lawyers, we gotta get more of this, we gotta get more of that, we gotta get more, we gotta develop this company. And it's like, we're not a company, we're a collection of people who have shared interests, who are going through the toil of a labor job. We are not them. Our power does not come from outsmarting them, out-lawyering them, out-lobbying them. That's not where our power comes from. Our power comes from being strong and being tough and recognizing that when we say something, it means something, and we're going to stand behind it. And you will pay for it, because no matter how cool you think you are, or how much you own, how much money you have, you can't get done if we don't show up. And that's true of every business. And that, to me, is cool. I don't know when we lost the idea that was cool. I feel like when I see old movies, like the cool guy was the one who got off of work and lit up a cigarette and walked home. We changed that. That guy's not cool anymore. Now the cool guy is the one who bosses people around and sucks.
We got worse at wasting time. Not wasting time, but passing time, I should say. Yeah. We like don't want to just waste time, and I don't mean that in a bad way. I shouldn't say waste, but just we don't want to. None of us do. I include myself, and I had almost an epiphany this weekend, because I was out in Washington. I was at the water with my 3-year-old son, and I was just like, I didn't look at my phone or anything for hours. And it was like, sometimes it's just like, man, sometimes doing nothing's really nice. but we got away from that. Now you always have to be doing something. You always have to be working towards something. You always have to be working all that. That's why I can't really better anything you just said. I think that's phenomenal, because that's how I viewed it.
My kids are, the three of them are different, and so I try to give them different things. But one of them, my youngest daughter, will tell me she's bored, and my response is, congratulations.
Hi, like, bored, nice to meet you.
That's like, no, I mean, like, that's awesome. I'm bored, and like, I'm full of, no, congratulations. Yeah. Like, it's such a privilege to be bored. Like, you're bored, congratulations.
Have anything.
Now go and enjoy.
Not to have a 14-point checklist.
Yeah, like, I'm bored, congratulations.
Yes.
And my son is different, where he really knows how to enjoy his free time. And so I have to approach him a little differently, where it's like, hey, bruh, we gonna get anything done today? we gonna get something done. Yeah, it's very different. My oldest daughter is like, she's a firstborn, so she does all the firstborn.
Okay,
yeah,
yeah, firstborn traits. Didn't your son just start playing tackle football recently, like a year or two ago?
Yeah, last year was his first year.
Last year,
last year was his first year of tackle football. He's gonna play again this year, but yeah, it was
okay.
It was fine. I mean,
is that the only sport he's playing? Or is it?
I mean, flag. Else? He does flag too. I mean, he's played flag since he was a kid. It's his favorite. Yeah. Like, he's played all the sports, soccer, baseball. No matter what he was playing, he was always playing tackle football, unfortunately. He would lead his basketball team in fouls. He'd be running into people on the baseball diamond, soccer. He was always getting carded. Like, the man just... Yeah. Oh, yeah. In flag football, he was getting all the unnecessary roughness penalties. Like, he just wants to hit. So he's playing football now.
Less prone to hit
now, though. I'll be honest with you. Like, now other people hit shit.
When everybody can do it. I know. It's so funny how it persists out. Like, basketball, bruiser. I can throw it down in basketball, but I play quarterback for a reason in football. There was no way. I had schools recruit me as a tight end out of high school. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I didn't put my hand in the dirt. And, you know, looking back, once I got big, I was like, yeah, maybe they were onto something. But, you know, it was like, I wasn't touching any of that. But that's why I'm glad just talking about just the strength of unions is that you're never going to better the owners in their kind of sandbox. So you have to kind of build your own sandbox and make them play with you, if that makes sense. Like, you have to bring them to your arena to battle your strength. And that's what I agree with you. That's like, no, we need, it feels like they try to get fancier, like you said, run it like a company. And that's kind of frustrating me. It's like, I get you're trying to appear more legit because you're a bunch of former players that maybe have a little bit of, you know, personality with that, like a little bit of like,
get fraud. It. I went to business school. Like, I was like, this is right. This is who I want to be. This is who I am. Then I realized like, no, I liked who I was before. Like, that's who I am. And I think the risky thing, and I was somebody at the union who was like a huge proponent of like, we got to get this, we got to get that, we got to get better here, we got to get better there. Like, the sooner I think any union understands that the closer you can be to the players, the better off you can be, to the point where now when people say the NFLPA, or honestly, any sports union, they think about it as separate from the players. And the players think about it that way also, because they're like, the union did this, the union did that. Like, that's the biggest mistake is like, there was a time when the union was built by the players, and the players like, that's us, not that's them. And I think the more I understand the drive to want to be more legitimate and to the insecurity is what it was in me was like, I got to go to a fancy business school to show that I can compete in that way. The insecurity, and it's born of like this false hierarchy that we've all accepted that like those people are the elite. That's who we all should be. It's like, no, it's okay to be who you are. And yeah, I just think that that's the core thing that the unions have to figure out how to get back to doing is being player driven and the players feeling ownership about it. Sorry, this is a whole nother podcast teary-eyed about it because it's saying something to me. Yeah.
I've always been, well, the NFLP, like I said, my dad was big in it. He was his player rep, you know, when he was with the Seahawks for years and years. And like they went through two strikes when he was playing.
Yep.
We for sure won. And I, maybe he came in right after the first one, but for sure one, but he's always talked about it. But I was, when he was with the Raiders, and that's when I got to work with him. Like, that was the one time when him and I were peers and coworkers, but I heard how he was talking to other coaches that were former players and how little those former players knew about what the NFLPA was doing was actually like, I could tell my dad was really disappointed. Like, how do you not, they're sending us emails. Like, I'm getting the same emails you guys are getting. Like, why aren't you like taking, like, feel the power? Like, they are part of it. That is, you are a member of that union. You're all in this together. And so anyways, I've just kind of, it's been something that's near to me, even if I was never a member of it.
And it's a belief, sorry. And it's a belief that, you are owed something or that you earned something. And like the things that you benefit from today are a result of your hard work alone. No, it's not. The only reason why you get anything today is because people like your father were willing to go on strike. It's the only way you get anything. Correct. And the deal is not fair. It's bent in the owner's favor, but it's closer. Like, you can have the success that you want. You can buy your mom the house. You can take care of your kids, send them to fancy schools. You can have the money to invest in other businesses because other people sacrificed and got no reward. Like the vast majority of the people who were a part of the union, who went through the ugliest, hardest fights, got nothing for it but brain injuries. And like, that's the thing that when people are like, the union did this, the union did that, it pisses me off to no end, because people did sacrifice for you to be here. And the belief that you're not, you don't owe anything to anyone else behind you or anyone else who's coming in front of you, who you're gonna, like, you don't owe that to this organization, to me is annoying. And it's like, the union did this. Like, the union's the reason why you have anything. And it's, or it's a huge reason why. Yes, you beat out a bunch of other people, but if the union hadn't sacrificed, you would have beat out a bunch of other people so that one team could own your rights for your entire career, not give you any health insurance and pay you pennies and have no option to get to a free market. So that always really pisses me off. I don't know how we ever get back to that, but I think hopefully we're turning the corner. And I think it's societal. Like I mentioned, it's not just in sports. It's all of us kind of look at unions like they're stupid and like, I want to be the boss. I'm going to do my own thing. Everybody work for me. I'm going to win. Like, nah, it's okay. It's cool to be one of the workers. And the last thing I'll say on that, maybe, I don't know, I might get fired up again, is the further we move away from, to your point, and I'll use a football analogy, maybe perfect. We are built to play a physical game. We're built to run the ball. And somehow we convinced ourselves through analytics or whatever that we need to spread it out, that passing's more efficient. It's only more efficient if you got receivers and a quarterback. We ain't got none of that. We are power eye organization. And the more we start to try to elaborate out into this other, like, what are we doing? We're not going to trick them. We're not going to run some fancy scheme that's going to get them. We have to run the ball, which means the power center is denying our labor. That's it. And they need to believe that you're willing to do it, because you are willing to do it. You have to actually do it. You're going to have to actually do it. Until then, our union and every other sports union, it's not just on football, every other sports union is going to continue to take steps backwards in the way that they have. So that's that. Call me up if you want me to fight. I can't wait.
The line has to be real. That's what I think. Like, you have to have lines, and they have to be real. And I feel like that's the thing, is like, these lines have been they feel very fungible recently, at least maybe in the last 5, 6, 7 years, whatever, 8 years. And it's funny you say that, though. I don't know why, but you mentioned like the spatial awareness testing, and, you know, and I got two questions here, two random parts. I've always wanted to see NFL centers tested for that, because I'm always fascinated that they can see so much with their heads down and having to look up and do all that and whip it. And the other thing, though, and this is tied to NFLPA, Next Gen Stats and everybody, they have all those, you know, miles per hour tracking and, you know, distances tracked and all that. Shouldn't the NFLPA be, you know, trying to hide that? You know, shouldn't they be using that as a carrot that they should not let that, because you can use that in negotiations? Because I know I use those stats to see Tyreek Hill slowing down, AJ Brown slowing down, and I don't know. That's just a thought. I don't know. You have to answer, but that's just something that's been on my mind. And I have friends that are probably screaming at me right now.
I can answer that for sure. To be honest with you, should you fight it? You can ask me anything, and my answer would be yes.
Yes.
Yeah. And it's not. It's not.
Everything should be
because negotiable. I mean, every chip that they want. And it's not like, there's some things that are advantageous for both sides, then you don't have to, like, if it's going to get in the way, then of course. But like, this is the point of the union, is like, what you have to understand, and I'll go back to the football analogy, is like, yes, we want to put on a good game. We want, like, if we think of two separate teams, we want to put on a good game because that benefits both sides. We have a good game. But we want to win the game. And what you have to understand is the guys on the other side, like, they're not going to try to, like, cross the line. Like, they're not going to try to, like, poison your pregame meal. But within the confines of the game, nothing that they are doing is to help you, right?
Right.
Nothing that they are doing is geared towards helping you. And I don't mean this to say, like, I like Roger Goodell, and I think that I think I've gotten softer on my opinion of Roger and the owners as I've gotten older. Is like, I actually don't think that they're evil. Like, I used to kind of think, like, these evil sons of just want to destroy our players and make a bunch of money. I don't think that anymore. I think they're self-interested and they're powerful, and they behave in the way that any time that any self-interested power goes unchecked. And, like, it's our responsibility to check the power. And I think it's not only we get very myopic in, like, how this affects the players. I also think that it speaks to a healthy game. The game gets better when the tension between the league and the players is equal, and it creates a paradigm that I think provides the best possible game. If you get a game, so, like, you go back to when players couldn't change teams. You have no ability to create competition. Like, you have, all right, we got one guy who's the best, and this team has all the best guys. They can't move anywhere. All right, you have that dynasty that exists, and then there are other teams that are just terrible. Like, I think that these things push and pull. You see it happening in basketball now, where the second apron is starting to create a dynamic that we're not sure we're gonna like in the long run. Is we don't we're not aware
sometimes
of
we don't know the repercussions of all those changes.
Right.
Yeah, like
that's, I just think the thing. How sometimes important it is. Yeah,
ripples.
Right, exactly. Yeah, and there's only one body that can push back against the owners having everything exactly the way they want it. And exactly the way they want it is, it's not always good for them either. Like, it speaks to where we started with constraints. And to your point, we're a quality tandem because we did the hell out of this show and brought it back to where it started. We should do this more often.
It is.
You never had me on before.
I think so too. Yeah, I know. This is, you know, circles. I think that's what we've mentioned several times, but just like the conversation. Yeah. I was going to say, you know, this is how I was going to wrap it, just so you know. It was like, you're talking about, you know, rising tides raise all ships. I think that's what you are, Dominique. You're a rising tide. You raise the ship. That is football 301 with your appearance today.
But thank you for that. You got to come raise it on my show.
Love to. And we can bully Charlie a little bit. No, I do. We're closing it out today, and we'll be back next week. I think we are starting two shows a week. I know we are, because I was a part of that scheduling. I know we are starting two shows a week next week. We'll be back with the top 10 offenses and maybe top 10 defense. I think we'll do top 10 defenses as well, and then we'll get into our division preview series, because training camp will be rolling next time you hear me. Hall of Fame game is around the corner. College Fantasy is now on Yahoo. Check it out at yahoofantasy.com/college. Very excited about that. Had a great discussion earlier, or last week. Now, time is just all over the place for me. I'm recording this on a Wednesday. This is coming out next Tuesday. That show came out yesterday. Recorded it last week. All of this stuff. It's the off season. We're going to get back to the camp schedule soon. But again, thank you to Dominique for joining me. That was such a fun discussion. I hope you guys enjoyed it, because that was basically our texts in a podcast form. It was so much fun for him joining us. But subscribe to us here at Football 301. Rate us 5 stars wherever you get your podcasts. Also, big news, the Yahoo Sports NFL YouTube channel is here. Subscribe now so you're ready when we start rolling next week with two shows a week during camp. Thank you to everyone behind the scenes for making us look and sound good. Thank you all for listening. See you guys next time.